I am through the acute part of treatment, and yeah, my body feels really good, and the prognosis is good too.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, NPR Life Kit host Marielle Segarra confronts a breast cancer diagnosis. A lot of public radio reporting is telling difficult stories about challenging things that happen to other people. Well, for NPR Life Kit host Marielle Segarra, a surprising breast cancer diagnosis a year ago was also a chance to do some good, getting out the word about risk factors, treatment, and the latest science. And Marielle joins us now. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, Ian, thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Yeah. My diagnosis started with my doctor finding a lump in my breast, and that was almost exactly a year ago. November 2nd was when that happened. So that was an interesting moment for me the other day to think about how much had happened in a year. But I am through the acute part of treatment, and yeah, my body feels really good, and the prognosis is good too.
That's great to hear. If you don't mind my asking, how did you receive the news? I mean, I have to imagine, and based on what's in the episode of Life Kit about this, that it was a real shock.
Yeah, it was. I went from basically an annual visit to my gynecologist, and being under 40, I'm not getting regular, or I wasn't getting annual mammograms yet. And so she just did a breast exam, which I would recommend that everyone do when they go to their doctor. But she felt a lump, and I had not felt it myself, so I was totally surprised even at that. And then when she said, okay, I want you to have imaging done, I thought, well, that's going to be fine, though. You know, I just really couldn't imagine that I would get breast cancer at this age, because I don't have a strong family history of it. And I later was tested for genetic mutations, and I didn't have those either. It just wasn't really on my mind. So then I had to go through the various stages of getting diagnosed, you know, doing a mammogram, an ultrasound, and then doing a biopsy, and then waiting for the results. And by the time I got the biopsy, I already knew that basically when they look at your images, they give it a score, like 1 to 5. It's called the BI-RADS system. And mine at that point had been given a 5. Which means highly suspicious for cancer, 95% likely. So I had some time to make peace with it, I guess. But the biopsy was basically done to confirm it. And I guess I thought, well, maybe I'm in the 5%, you know? But I wasn't. And I got the result the day after Thanksgiving. It was the radiologist who had performed the biopsy who called me. And I was really, really upset. And I didn't know what was going to happen next, because it was a Friday after Thanksgiving at like 5 p.m. And I just had to sit with that all weekend.
The ultimate Friday news dump.
Yeah, it was horrible. I mean, that kept happening throughout treatment. And other patients that I've talked to, this happens to them too, where your results get released into a patient portal often on a Friday after a radiologist looks at them, but no doctor has called you to tell you about them. So you get a ping in your email inbox that says you have new results, and you have to decide if you want to look at them or not. You may not even have a doctor assigned to you yet, like an oncologist, for instance, a surgeon, and your gynecologist won't have seen those results yet either. So it messes with your head.
I identified with something you said about all of this, which is, you know, once you take the test, you might as well just breathe deep and wait for the result, because working yourself, you know, into a lather isn't going to help things either.
No, the results will be what they are, right? Either way, whether you panic now or not. So, I mean, it might seem easier said than done, but I found a way to do that throughout treatment. Because it's not just, if you do get diagnosed with cancer, it's not just that one result that you're waiting for. They have to find out how extensive it is and what type it is and what the treatment's going to look like. So there were many moments like that where I had to wait for results, and that they could really make a big difference in my life. They could make a difference even if I was going to be able to live. And when faced with that, I really went back to a lot of the mindfulness stuff that I've learned at Life Kit and just in my life in general. I just found that it doesn't make sense to borrow trouble from the future. I forget who said that quote initially, but I always think about that. It's let me deal with what I know today.
Along those lines, you know, like a lot of people choose not to disclose an illness like this, and you're doing really the opposite in a very public way. So how did you come to that decision about what you would say, you know, on the radio?
Yeah, I thought about it a lot. I mean, I finished treatment in July, and up until that point, I wasn't ready. It felt too raw, honestly, like I was still in the midst of it. And once I started to feel like I had more of a handle on what had just happened, I guess, and I was feeling a lot better in my body, then I felt like I was ready. And I'm not someone who wants to share every bit of my personal life publicly or on the show, but I do it when it feels like it makes sense, when it feels like it might help someone. I think about someone who I interviewed earlier this year. Her name is Shazik Sonoda. She is the founder of No More Under. It's a group, a nonprofit dedicated to preventing children from drowning. And she started that nonprofit because her son, Yori, died drowning in a backyard pool when he was 3 years old. And that's a really difficult thing to share publicly. It's a really difficult thing to have to keep reliving. But she felt like what she learned was worth sharing because it could save someone's life, and that people will take these things more seriously if they hear from someone who's been through it. And so that was worth it to her. And it's worth it to me, too, I realized.
So you were young, as you say, for this type of diagnosis, and age is a moving target with respect to breast cancer and when certain tests should be ordered or not. What's the latest thinking for when people should start to really take this seriously?
Yeah, so more young women are getting diagnosed with breast cancer. When we wrote this piece, we did so much research, and there are like 100 footnotes in this episode, right? Because it's a very technical thing to talk about. But let me look at the exact stats. It's that in the past decade, there's been an increase in breast cancer diagnosis rates for all women, but even more so for women under 50. And we used to think about breast cancer as something that affected women mostly older than 50. But now, like for instance, I interviewed a medical oncologist at MD Anderson Cancer Center, and he said that more than half of his patients are under 50. Their researchers are still trying to figure out exactly why this is. It's hard to pinpoint just one thing, which can be maddening if you are diagnosed, because then you're saying, well, how do I prevent this from happening in the future? You know, what lifestyle changes, for instance, should I be making? And we only know certain things about that. But I would say that anyone with breast tissue should think about their risk for getting breast cancer. And I say anyone with breast tissue because it could be if you're a transgender woman, it could be if you're a transgender man and you haven't had top surgery, it could be if you're a cisgender man, and even if you just have like pecs, that's still breast tissue. And if you, for instance, have a genetic mutation that runs in your family, you could get breast cancer. So there are all these factors that are involved. Also, what hormones you're being exposed to, if you've ever taken synthetic hormones. So I think it can really help to start with one of those online risk calculators and start with a conversation with your doctor and think about what factors are involved for you and what time it makes sense to start getting mammograms, if you should get mammograms. In most cases, so there's disagreement among the groups that issue these medical guidelines as to when women should get mammograms, when they should start, and how often they should do them. But the oncologists that we interviewed said they tend to agree with the guideline that is women 40 and older should get a mammogram every year. That said, mammograms are not a perfect tool and they're often unreliable if you have dense breast tissue, which half of the population does. So that's another thing to really take note of when you get a mammogram is, does it say that you have dense breast tissue in the report? Because if it does, then you'll have to consider other kinds of screening and talk to your doctor about that.
You know, one thing I don't think I'd really thought through that much until I listened to this episode was that a lot of the treatment that you get, even if you are a patient who's dealing with a breast cancer diagnosis, comes down to your ability to self-advocate and to press. Whereas you just assume, you know, something bad like this happens and you're going to be in the best possible hands going forward and someone will know the way through. That's not always the case.
No. It's not. You can get really different care depending on where you go. And I've also realized that after getting multiple opinions for different parts of my treatment, that different doctors have different plans. And they look at the same numbers and statistics and studies and come to different conclusions. And so that might change, for instance, like if you are diagnosed with cancer, what type of chemotherapy you do and how many rounds of it. Or it might mean that you do a different type of radiation therapy. For instance, I got something called proton therapy, which is supposed to do a better job at saving surrounding tissue preventing the rays from hitting the surrounding tissue. But that wasn't offered to me from the beginning. I had to have a friend who found out about it and found out that my cancer hospital actually offered it. And I had to ask about it. And then they said, oh, yeah, you might qualify. And I ended up getting it. But I couldn't believe that it came down to that, because it was the difference between whether any of the radiation would reach my heart tissue or not. And because if you have left-sided breast cancer, that's something you have to think about, right? Like if the radiation is going to potentially damage any part of your heart. And there are ways to position a patient and do breathing techniques to mitigate that. But when I did this other type of therapy, in my experience, and I will say we haven't at LifeKit reported on proton therapy or radiation, so this is all me speaking from my personal experience, but that was something that I just wish had been presented to me as an option so I could decide. But yeah, I had to advocate for it.
One thing I really appreciated about the episode and the way that, you know, the kind of research project that it set off is laid out is how it demystifies the language around discussing breast health and breast cancer. So who did you see as the audience for this project?
Well, especially women, because women are more likely to get breast cancer. 1 in 8 women in a lifetime. Those are the current statistics. But particularly young women and women under 50 who may have started getting mammograms or may not have, and who may not be getting annual or any routine breast exams from a doctor. I really wanted them to know that they should be doing those things. They should be learning about what their personal risk is and trying to catch this if they are going to get it as early as possible, because it really makes a difference in how much treatment you have to do and whether this is going to be something that you have to deal with for the rest of your life or whether it's something that could potentially be cured and like stamped out completely.
So now that you have a little bit of distance here, how did this experience change your outlook, if at all?
My outlook on life?
Yeah,
it's a big question. I think I feel that I'm more resilient than I ever realized. And I'm also getting less ruffled by minor inconveniences. Like, even things that I might have made me nervous or that I was scared of before. Like, I was driving with my mom actually in Brooklyn, and she was trying to parallel park, and someone was honking, laying on the horn behind her, and you know, the person ended up kind of scaring her away. And my mom's really good at parallel parking. She grew up in Brooklyn, but she was just like, oh, this person's being so annoying. And like, she didn't, but I was just like, you know what? Take your time. Like, this person can wait. It's not that, like, you can wait, man. You know, like that, I just kind of felt like, okay. So I think when people, and when I see other people also making a big deal out of nothing lately, I'm just sort of like, yeah, miss me with that, you know. I'm kind of just like, I've been through enough this year, let's not make a mountain out of a molehill kind of thing, you know.
Well, I'm really grateful that you're, you know, kind of using your spotlight to do this work, and thrilled with your good medical news. Wishing you nothing but the best, and Marielle, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.